Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to the Couple Speak Relationship Forum on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Susan Lager, a psychotherapist and couples coach at the Couple Center and Couple Speak, where I broadcast live monthly on Wednesdays, usually at 8:30 p.m. Tonight's an exception, so we're broadcasting at 9 for a half-hour show. Tonight's episode, May 29th, 2013, is called the Marriage Fitness Test. I'll be discussing the 20 symptoms of strength or stress in marriages used by professionals in the field to get an overview of the health in partnerships. It's a marital symptom checklist I encourage you to use on your own or preferably with your spouse to get a read on where you're at. I think you'll find it's a very, very useful tool. First, one technical issue. Your toll-free call-in number is 877-497-9046. You can just listen, or you can join me on the air with questions or comments by dialing 1 on your phone. You'll then be in line to join me live. I'll pause, I think, at a few points to allow for any calls as we go, so this is a more fluid process. And now to the checklist. Each spouse should take this test independently first. I think that would be ideal. Answer true or false. After you've completed the test, compare your results with your spouse's. That will provide, I feel, useful information about where you're on the same page or not about your marriage. And then after sharing your results, have a discussion about what you'd like to do about the problematic areas. If you're interested in doing some couples work, feel free to give me a call at my Portsmouth, New Hampshire office at 603-431-7131. You could also buy a copy of each of my two new books in the Couple Speak series about relationship issues, both available on Amazon under Susan Lager. Both provide key tools for communication, problem solving, and increased happiness in marriage. The nice thing is that they're both available as paperbacks as well as ebooks. So just go to Susan Lager on once you get on Amazon. I'm going to get to the checklist now. So question number one, I find my partner less attractive or desirable than I did at the beginning of our relationship. And, you know, I think this question means significantly less attractive, not the usual wane in sexual desire or experience of attractiveness that one experiences generally, but significantly less attractive. Number two, I have started noticing attractive members of the opposite or same sex, friends, neighbors, or coworkers, and I have been having regular romantic fantasies about these people. This is a key thing to really look for as a problematic kind of indicator. Number three, when I hear of friends, relatives, or coworkers getting a divorce or separating, I wonder if I should be taking such steps. So the kind of fantasizing about that or hand-wringing about that or visiting, I call it hovering by the escape hatch in a marriage, where you're really daily thinking about, should I leave? Should I leave? Would it be better if I left? That may be an indicator of some significant problems. Number four, I do not communicate as freely with my spouse as I did in the past. And this could involve any kind of communication. If it feels like you're not able to talk about significant things, or if you're having more trouble just kind of shooting the breeze about things that have been happening with you, happening to you, if conversation doesn't flow freely and you feel constrained in conversations of any kind that's, you know, I would put it a true next to that question. Number five, I no longer enjoy doing everyday things with my partner, like taking a walk or doing the household chores together. When, in other words, there's an experience of joy that has left being together, left the experience of being together, and there's no longer any enjoyment in the companionship or the doing of things together. That's what that question is getting to. Number six, I often get bored with my partner. And, this question doesn't mean an occasional kind of feeling of eye roll about something your partner may be saying that may not be interesting to you, but the key word here is often. I often get bored with my partner, where there's an experience of a lack of stimulation with your partner. There's a lack of excitement. There's a lack of mental or emotional stimulation with the partner. Now, at this point, I think I'm going to wait to take any questions. We have a few callers on the air, but what you can do is just dial 1 at any point if you have a question, and I'll take it after I finish a particular section, okay? Number 7, I often get impatient or angry toward my partner, and that addresses an experience of just feeling annoyed, aggravated, a general feeling of having to wait all the time. Impatience is really the perfect word to describe it, but also aggravation and anger, where there's a feeling of, you know, you feel your blood pressure is going up, there's an elevated stress response, and where that becomes more of a common experience with the partner. Number 8, my partner and I are keeping each other at arm's length emotionally. So when you begin to experience an emotional disconnection where there's an experience of defensiveness, that you're not engaging, you feel kind of shut down. Often women report that experience. And you just don't take risks. There's a high feeling of defensiveness, guardedness with the partner around anything that has any kind of emotional overtones to it. Then that would be a true, answering true to that question. Number 9, we often argue over money matters, child rearing, or other topics. So in other words, when there's repetitive conflict over things around which you would hope for there to be collaboration or some kind of meeting in the center, some kind of compromise, but you feel like you're in opposite camps. One of the words I use with couples is an experience of polarization where you just do not see eye to eye about significant things. And I'm not talking about which movie do we go to tonight, or which beer do we buy, or which wine, or whatever. But when it's about significant issues like child rearing or financial matters, or even just the way you want to live your life, those are values pieces. They're values areas of content, and you know, what are each of your respective ideas about those things? And when there's a feeling that we are nowhere near the same page, maybe we don't share the same values, that is a very, very significant marker of high stress in a relationship, because it gets to kind of the underpinnings of the relationship, you know, when you feel like you're not on the same wavelength about really important things. Number 10, I am, or my partner is, currently involved in an extramarital affair. When that's happening, or you're pretty sure it's happening for your partner, one person already has one foot out the door. One person has disengaged and has said, I am removing myself from this relationship emotionally. I'm making unilateral decision about putting my affection and my attention elsewhere. I'm not giving you the benefit of knowing it. So it creates an uneven playing field in terms of a kind of power balance. One person knows what's going on and the other person is in the dark. And it's a divesting of attention, love, caring, and investment in the relationship. And that is a point of crisis if you are in a relationship where you have a monogamous agreement. Now, if you're in a marriage where it's an open marriage, and it wouldn't be called an affair, so the question wouldn't apply, but if you're in a marriage where you've agreed that we each do our own thing and we're just discreet about it and we just assume that it may be going on at any point but we just don't talk about it, that's a very different deal. But if you're in a relationship where you have made a pledge or a vow to be monogamous and one person has made a unilateral decision to move out of the relationship and they're having an affair, that's a really key marker of high stress, big problem, crisis in a marriage. Question number 11. I feel unappreciated in this relationship. And I will often hear men and women talking about that, where they feel that no matter what they do, it's not acknowledged, it's not valued somehow, it's not appreciated. And when people don't feel appreciated, they lose steam. They lose energy to engage. They stop trying. Women often use the expression, I don't feel seen. I feel invisible because everything I do for my husband seems to be invisible to him. He doesn't seem to value my contribution. And when people feel that their presence in the marriage as a person or their contributions behaviorally aren't valued or appreciated, I would say that's a very, very big symptom of high stress in a marriage, and a marriage that really needs some work and needs some love and attention and care. Number 12, I am resentful of my partner's lack of appreciation, attention, and caring. So it's not only feeling, you know, having the experience of a lack of attention and caring, but it's also growing feelings of resentment about it. Resentment is kind of a low-level experience of anger. It's kind of bitterness, something that's stewing and brewing viscerally in your gut. And it's toxic to a relationship because resentment can occur around any one of a number of things. But in this question, it's really specific to a lack of appreciation, attention, and caring. You know, I feel resentment about these things, that my partner just doesn't feel like they're in the marriage to me, and I'm feeling more quietly angry about it. Resentments tend to grow. Often they're just above the level of consciousness. You know, they're often, it's kind of like a glacier where the top part is visible, but underneath there's a lot of mass underneath the surface. That's usually the way it works with resentment. You're aware of surface stuff, but there's often deeper stuff that feels really bad. Number 13, I have lost my personal identity in this marriage. Men and women both describe that. I think in my experience, I hear women complaining about that more often. And I think that's partly conditioning. I think it's generational. I think it's the way women are enculturated in this, in the American culture anyway. We come from a history of women as being property, women as being subservient, needing to accommodate, placate, and defer to men, men having the voice, the power, the control. And but even in this day and age when women are, I was just reading that somewhere that in 40% of marriages, women earn more than men. So even in this day and age of women out in the workplace earning as much, if not more, than men, you often hear about an experience of losing oneself, losing oneself, one's sense of identity, one's kind of having it subsumed to the marriage or the demands and the requirements and the requests of the partner. I've heard men complain about that also, but in my experience, it usually goes the other way. And it inevitably creates a depressive experience, very deeply rooted resentment, often depression, and often I see women shutting down around that, really feeling like they're losing themselves in the marriage. Now, I have a number of callers on the call. Don't be shy. If you have a question, feel free to voice it. If you have a comment, I would welcome that. I always prefer shows where people call in and it's more of a conversation rather than me just talking into the big void. So this would be a good time to voice it if you have a question. No? Okay. I'll just move on. Number 14, my only interests are my partner and his or her interests. So again, it's the experience of narrowing oneself down to be in a marriage, relinquishing friends, relinquishing a separate sense of oneself, separate joys, separate hobbies, and moving into a kind of fused or almost symbiotic posture in a marriage where there's a lot of we, but one has relinquished the I in the marriage, the sense of oneself in the marriage. Not a good thing. Number 15, I blame only my partner for the problems in our relationship. This, again, is a really big one because what it's really addressing is a lack of shared ownership for problems in the relationship. And I can tell you in all my years of experience doing individual and couples work, it generally takes two to tango, even in an abusive relationship. It takes one person to do the abusing. It takes another person to somehow submit to it or stay, not set limits or boundaries or not make, not get out. So there usually are different contributions. I call them partners commit different crimes in relationships. Very often one's crimes are more vocal or more obvious than the others. But when there is a lack of, when there's no experience of, well, I'll look at my part and I probably have a part and okay, and I'll look at my part. You know, some kind of joint acknowledgement around the co-creation of the problems. When that is lacking, that's a big problem. And blame, by the way, you know, that's the beginning of that sentence. I blame only my partner. The experience of blame is really, really toxic because blame, you can't go anywhere with blame. It's a projection outward of the responsibility. It's a lack of looking inside and saying, all right, how was I part of this problem? How am I part of the solution? Number 16, my partner blames only me for the problems in our relationship. So in other words, it's either way. Either I blame my partner, that's number 15, or my partner blames me. So in this one, you know, I may recognize that I have some culpability in our problems, but my partner doesn't see it. And so I'm kind of the fall guy in the relationship. I'm the, I call it the identified patient, the person around which the relationship gets organized in terms of the definition of the problem, the person who's the assigned problem in the marriage. Number 17, I avoid using the word we in speaking of anything relating to our relationship. So that's really, again, a kind of disconnected stance, a lack of experience of we-ness, and a defensiveness around referencing the we, because very often there isn't a feeling of we-ness. Number 18, I do not feel like our relationship is a sharing one in terms of sharing possessions, time, and privacy. So when, if you have the experience that there's a lack of we-ness, either in terms of the first question, you don't refer to it, or the feeling is that somehow we don't have kind of common territory. We haven't established a kind of sharing, whether it's things that we own, whether it's around finances, sharing of time, or a sense of intimacy, some kind of personal sacred space that's just ours, and it could be a private language that you have between the two of you, or just intimacies that you've shared, confidences that you've shared that just belong to the two of you. It's a kind of sacred zone. When there is a lack of that, that's a problem. Number 19, my partner and I have conflicting ideas on practically everything. And so they say opposites attract, and I think there's some truth to that, but when there is a pervasive experience of difference and that we are just, I think of it as, we're just kind of from different planets, and there is no common ground. We don't enjoy the same things. We butt heads about ideas, about realities, about what we enjoy. There's a high level of conflict. So there's an experience of toxic difference. That's a really serious issue in a relationship. And the key to that question is, my partner and I have conflicting ideas on practically everything. There's always going to be some conflict in a relationship where people are conscious, but when it's about everything, that's really bad news. Okay, drum roll. Here we get to the 20th item on the symptom checklist. My partner and I do not agree on one another's viewpoint in terms of goals or philosophy of life. So if your vision for what you would like to accomplish in life, what your vision is for the marriage, what your ideas about a happy life, a meaningful life, don't jive, then you really don't have the basis of a particularly happy marriage. I mean, you don't really have the basis of much of a relationship, because happy marriages are built on a certain critical amount of common ground. And so if you feel your partner is headed toward A and you are headed toward Z, that's really problematic. So that's the list. It's a 20-symptom checklist, and you can use it either way. If very few of these are true, and I'll tell you how to score this at this point. You know, it may be an indicator that you're in pretty good health in the relationship. So now, tally up your own score, the number of trues, add up only the true statements, okay? And then you tally your partner's score, and then you do a couple score together. And this is how you do it. To score this, add up only the true statements and put that number down for your score. To get your couple score, add up all true statements on both of your checklists. So you add up your own, only your trues, your partner add only their trues, and then you add that up, and that's your couple score. Now count a symptom only once if you both marked it true. So if you both have a true on one statement, you don't count that as two trues. It equals one true. And here's an interpretation of the symptom checklist. If the number of symptoms marked true is 1 to 2 total, okay, almost everyone can answer true to 1 or 2, but rectify the problems identified. It should be a joy for the two of you to pursue that, because you're really doing well. You have, you know, very few areas where it feels divisive or really bad. If the number of symptoms marked true is 3 to 5, and okay, So you add up yours, your partner adds up theirs, only the true statements, and you do a couple score, adding up all the truths together, but no double truth where you both agree. If you rate 3 to 5, you may be heading for trouble. Don't take your relationship for granted because it's getting into some rocky territory. Together, work on whatever symptoms have been revealed. You need to be proactive. See this as an early warning system. It's kind of like the handwriting on the wall. Don't ignore it. It's not the kind of thing that's just going to ebb away, and then maybe one day you're going to wake up and everything's going to be better. It doesn't work that way. If the number of symptoms marked true is 6 or more, attempt to discuss your symptoms with your partner calmly and responsibly, and reasonably, rather. Problem resolution is needed badly to get your full health restored. Try to shape up your marriage with a structured plan designed by a professional or with the help of a couple's therapist, and do it now. If you have 6 or more symptoms marked true, I would say you're in the red zone, and it's time for you to intervene immediately. And do it individually and do it together. So hopefully that gives you a read on where you're at in your own marriage. You'll use this. I find it's a very helpful indicator. It's a kind of prognosticator for, you know, where couples are at, not only at now, but where they may be going. So the most important thing is look at your scores and talk about it, and then come to a decision about what you want to do about it. This is not intended to be set up a hand-wringing exercise for the two of you, but more as a kind of identification of some symptoms. And think of it this way. If you were to suddenly have a giant 2-inch lump on your forehead that popped out one day, you wouldn't just, hopefully, you wouldn't just anguish over it and obsess about it. You would go get it checked out, and you would try to understand what that symptom tells you about you systemically. What's going on? Is it cancer? Is it, you know, a mole that's gone awry? What is it? Is it a boil? And what does it tell you about what you need to do? So symptoms, look at symptoms as important information. They are information waiting to be decoded. It's an early warning sign. Well, I don't think I'm going to have time for any questions, so your turn is over. You missed it if you have any questions at this point, because I am going to need to stop. But there's always next time. Anyway, I do have to go. Again, if you need the help of a professional, feel free to call me for some couples work, order a copy of my new books, or you can schedule my coaching program, the Couple Speak Relationship Tune-Up. For more information about that, go to my website, susanlager.com, and go to the coaching program. There's more about that on that page. My next show, which you can tune into, will be on Wednesday, June 19th at 8:30 p.m. again, Eastern Standard Time. And I haven't yet decided on a topic or whether I'll have a guest. If I have a guest, chances are it's going to be an hour show. If I don't have a guest, it'll once again be a half an hour show. And most of all, have a good month. I hope you do it. Keep your marriage healthy. Bye-bye.